Michael. I'm a sommelier, tarot reader, and former ballerina.
I'm Suzanne. I am a writer, an author, and a teacher.
And this is All the Woo.
A to Z. And we are in E for Egypt, and we are so excited because truly the other topics that we've talked about are things that we absolutely practice and love and are students of. But Egypt is ours.
It's a whole other level, Egypt for us.
We were actually talking about we could do a whole A to Z just on Egyptian topics that are related to woo.
Oh, yeah.
But we're just going to stick to one letter today.
Just one. And if we need to do an episode 2 for E, we might have to do that. I don't know. We'll see when we get there. But before we get into it, we just want to, as always, say that we want this to be a safe space. If you're woo curious or super deep into the woo, that we are just sharing our own experiences and what we've gathered over time, and hopefully making this a judgment-free zone where you can just know more or simply be entertained.
And if you decide that you want to visit Egypt after this, that's cool too.
We highly recommend it.
All right.
So our wine pairing for Egypt is more of a personal pairing here. We will get into the story of this, but the wine that we are referring to in our story is the wine that we have paired today, which is Kim Crawford Sauvignon Blanc. This is a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, style-wise known for being a little bit heavier on grapefruit and lime and being a really mouth-watering, refreshing white wine.
Really easy to drink.
Super easy to drink.
Super easy to drink. So, shall we go to Egypt?
We shall.
So every relationship has a meet-cute.
Yes.
And so mine and Michael's is about Egypt.
It is.
But it takes a moment for setup.
It does.
So Michael and I both used to have dogs. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that more in the ghost episode. But at the moment of this story, we both have living dogs, and they meet each other outside, mostly when my husband is walking our dog in the front and Michael is walking her dog around the neighborhood.
Yes.
And so my husband, I think for a couple of weeks, was like, there's this woman who lives next door. I think you might want to meet her. And I was up to my eyeballs in writing a book. And I was like, uh-huh, sure, what? Okay, fine.
I think he was actually asking me to join you all for a cocktail as he tried to explain, we just want to simply get to know who is Michael? And I was like, they seem really nice. But every single time he would ask, I literally had something that I needed to do because I was taking a lot of Brazilian jiu-jitsu classes in particular. So most time I was like, I'm actually taking my dog out right now so that I can go for the evening and go to class. And it felt like it was a solid year that these requests were there. And I was like, I can't. And then finally, I was like, I feel so bad. It's not that I don't want to do it. I'm like, okay, next time, whenever it is, I'm just going to drop whatever it is that I'm doing if I do have plans and plan on doing it. And it was that time that he just said, you know what? Why don't we just exchange numbers and we'll plan a time? And I was like, okay, that works.
My husband is a problem solver.
Yes. So we planned a time for me to come over. And I came over for an evening for a glass of wine. It was supposed to be.
So
yeah.
We are sitting there, and when you're, you know, meeting a complete stranger and mm-hmm. they're in your house, just the normal things that you talk about where you're trying to get an idea, orient to who they are. Mm-hmm. And so we had reached the point in the conversation where we had finished our wine and we had both scooted up. Like we were in the approach to leaving.
Yeah, the wrap-up phase of the conversation.
The wrap-up phase. And Michael said something like, I'm planning a trip to Egypt.
Yeah, it was my, oh, and something else to know about me. I'm planning a trip to Egypt. I'm going to go. This is something that I've been wanting to do my entire life. This is a bucket list item for me.
And my husband stood up and was like, well, I'm going to get another bottle, because he knew that my whole life has been about Egypt. I have written books about Egypt. I have, mm-hmm. one might say, vaguely obsessed with ancient Egypt. And so he was just kind of like, yes, I was right.
My intuition was correct.
Which is hilarious because he doesn't consider himself woo at all.
No.
But yes, so Kim Crawford is the wine that we were drinking.
Yes.
And then proceeded to drink
another bottle.
Yeah. Yes. It was a long conversation and really hasn't stopped since.
Yeah, I think that evening he sent me home with one of your books, honestly, your first of the Chloe and Chef 2 books. And so I immediately was like, oh, if this is about Egypt, and then plus it's somebody that I have met and so I know them, that makes it – I'm not normally a fiction reader. I have a hard time really getting into fiction books. So – but this – you know, there's a lot of reasons for me to want to read this book, which I think – okay, so I'm not a fast reader. I'm going to say that because I definitely am very meticulous and want to make sure that I'm taking everything in, so I'll reread information, which definitely slows down the process. So I think your book is one of the fastest that I've ever gone through in reading. But then there was also – this is the beginning of – there are so many overlaps between your character and myself, which I thought was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was done with the book, I came over – to give the book back, but then also to talk. And I think we ended up spending the entire day.
Was that our 12-hour date?
Yeah, that was our 12-hour date, essentially, where we were just going through all the
woo. She came over for brunch, and then brunch sort of just melted into the afternoon, and then that ended up being dinner, mm-hmm. and then... yeah, it just went on until like 11 o'clock.
Yeah, it was it came over with tea for my morning, and then... and then it turned into dinner. That's what happened.
So we were taking advantage of the pandemic. That's all I'm saying.
Yes.
So that is our meet cute. But Michael, what is like, obviously we could talk forever about Egypt. We really have spent the past couple of years talking about Egypt. But
yeah.
For you, for our dear listener who mm-hmm. may not know that much about Egypt or who may be going, yes, me too. ooh, I just made it turn around.
That's okay. Was that much excitement?
What are maybe two or three things that you have to say about Egypt within this confined space and also this confined space?
Of why somebody might want to have
why
interest.
Why you love it.
Oh, why I love it? Okay. Well, let's just say that Egypt encompasses all the woo-woo, like aliens to spiritual to like all the things, medical healing, everything.
So I'm just going to give you an aside, dear listener, because you can't see.
No.
But Michael is actually wearing a T-shirt that is a beautiful representation of the pyramids with a lovely, I don't know what class, flying saucer
yes.
above it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it seems mm-hmm. very symbolic.
I wore it specifically for today. Yes. And I would also like to say that Suzanne and her husband were the ones who gifted me this shirt. So there's that too.
Yeah.
But so, yes. So for me, Egypt, it includes everything woo-woo on so many levels. And I think the other thing that I really love about Egypt is I don't think that a lot of people give the ancient Egyptians credit. I think for the knowledge and insight that they had, not only on a physical level, especially for all the buildings, but then also on a spiritual level and understandings that they had as well. So although, you know, we can get into ancient alien theories on this. However, even without that, I would say to some extent that too much ancient alien theory into it, I think, doesn't do them justice for the insight that they already had at the time. And I think over a period of time, you start to see how that knowledge gradually gets lost. And I don't always know that people can really realize how long of a span that the ancient Egyptians, that society was really in play. It was for about 2,000 years that it was going on. So if you even think in our society, how much has happened in that time, so how much their society had changed during that time, there's so many different periods to it that I think people... I don't know. The idea of it is so much larger and you can go so deep into it on so many different levels, which really just speaks to me and my, you know, my brain and how it works that, I mean, it's like it was built for me. How about you, Suzanne?
So there were obviously, I have spent a lifetime exploring this. So my background with Egypt was when I was a little kid, I wanted to be an Egyptian. So we, as I believe I've mentioned, we moved to Spain when I was a kid, and my grandmother gave me a book to read on the plane. And it was written by a woman who had written it as a competition for a competition in Canada. Mm-hmm. And her father had brought her up. He had been a minister, I believe. Pauline Gedge is the author, had brought her up telling her she was the reincarnation of Hatshepsut. Mm-hmm. And just a sidebar, Hatshepsut was possibly one of the most successful female rulers in the history of the world. She maintained peace for 20 years. She did amazing things for her country.
She also had a lot of haters, as people have a tendency to have.
Yeah, especially since, you know, her nephew was kind of became the Napoleon of Egypt, as they call it. Anyway, so my grandmother gave me this book to read on the plane. I was in second grade going into third grade, and I read the entire book on the plane. Now, I am a fast reader, but that was really fast even for me. And then the next book that was very transformational for me was Mara, Daughter of the Nile, which is dealing with the same topic of Hatshepsut, but from the opposite position of her being actually a despot and abusing the people and all that kind of thing. So I got to see the same period of history from two different angles. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of, and it resonated with something in me that was like, I just love Egypt. I could probably also throw Cher in there a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I want it to look like Cher, and I'm absolutely the opposite of looking like Cher.
Okay. Fair.
but just that kind of mystique of having a history and having a culture and having rituals and all of those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And as I have matured, the things that I love are the fact that women had equal or almost more power than men. Like, it was a very equitable society. Mm-hmm. That a lot of the things that we consider issues, they didn't.
Yeah.
They had the merger of both religion and science, and so there wasn't that competition in the world that I think is very, like, we feel that absolutely in our bodies. Mm-hmm. In the West. And you've just got to love a people whose idea of heaven is just to be in a garden on a beautiful day.
Oh, yeah.
Like, 100%. We're not trying to conquer anybody. We're not trying to make anybody us. We're not trying to put our ideals on anyone. We're just about enjoying the beauty of the world and being in harmony.
Yeah.
So those are some of the things that I love about Egypt. Of course, the books I've written about Egypt have all been give me as much conflict as possible.
Something I should mention, because you were kind of saying where your love from Egypt began, which is something I had left out. I don't know. For me, there wasn't a defining moment. It just always was. From being very little, I would love, as a child, like before I was a teenager, take me to the library, and I knew exactly where the Egypt section was, and I just walked to that section and take books and just read them and try to, like, I would constantly do searches on the search engine there at the library looking for the Egyptian Book of the Dead, because I really just wanted the book where it was translated and I could just read that. I was really upset that that was not something that was available, or at least my library had at the time. Every single time that I had an opportunity to do a research paper, it was about that. Like, my senior English paper was about the embalming process of, like, how to, like, literally everything. So to interject the woo-woo part for me in my life for this, which at some point we'll get around to the story, but my first meeting with a medium coming into our lives and talking to us where we could ask a lot of questions, because, you know, reincarnation came up with that. And I had asked, I was like, okay, well, I've always been super obsessed with ancient Egypt to the point where I'm the person who corrects the documentaries that you see on TV as being inaccurate or misleading.
This is something that we have in common.
Yes, I'm totally that person.
The shouting at the, that's just a theory. Nobody's proved that. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And you're like, you're showing it as fact. That's not the case. Yeah, all of that. And so asking, and that the response was, yes, that you have had multiple. Well, the reason why is that in this lifetime, you have a very direct contact with a previous lifetime of yours, that there is a direct communication with that lifetime, although you've lived four lifetimes in ancient Egypt. And he gave me like an outline of kind of what the lifetime was, like what I did. And I was so like relieved, was kind of like my weird reaction. I'm like, oh, thank you. Like a reason for it. And just to say that it's not always the case for people, sadly.
And I would say that probably, so the reason why my grandmother gave me this book is because I was already obsessed. And the book, by the way, is Child of the Morning. If you are interested in Egypt, Pauline Gedge does a fabulous job, whether she's reincarnated or not. But they're not cheery books, so just bear that in mind.
I did read Mara, Daughter of the Nile. Suzanne lent that book to me, and it is very, very good. It is very good. I read that one very quickly. I was always excited because I do a lot of traveling, and when I am on the plane, I'm like, oh, I was just excited. I'm like, oh, I can take my time and actually just focus on the book. It was great.
Such a good book. But for me, probably the first time I heard about ancient Egyptians was in Bible stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is possibly my first introduction, because I don't know how else I would have really. But the same thing of, I cannot remember a time mm-hmm. when I did not love Egypt.
Yeah.
Ancient Egypt. So, yes.
Yeah. Let's see. Other connections. So when I finally, well, let's talk about, I know that Suzanne has been to Egypt more than once. I have only been once so far, but definitely planning on going. I considered my first trip as a reconnaissance trip to figure out where I'd like to go and visit next. And I definitely know the spaces, but it was such an amazing trip for me on so many levels, because not only did I have the confirmation of having previous lifetimes, but even later on in my life since that point, I had undergone a hypnosis where they retrieve past lives, and one of the past lives was an Egyptian past life. So I actually can now recall memories of being in places, you know, doing ceremonies and things like that. And I'm really, really convinced that two of the places that I went to go visit in on my trip, that I have memories of this place. Like, what I saw in my hypnosis, like, this space is exactly what it looked like, which is such a crazy feeling to have like a past life memory of a place that you've never physically been in this lifetime, and then to kind of be there. The emotion is
intense.
It's intense. Yeah, definitely.
And I would say, listener, if you are thinking about Egypt and you feel the same kind of draw, Egypt is a great place to visit, because the buildings, you know, they have been there for thousands of years. It's one of the few places on Earth that there are places that are relatively untouched. So you can walk into a temple. And if you were there, you know, during the New Kingdom or the Middle Kingdom, you probably can walk very similar paths.
Yes. Yeah. It's that's the other mind-blowing part to it, because I think as an American, we have so many different places that are rebuilt to simulate what it's like to go visit someplace rather than actually going to the place and like being in Disneyland or something like that, where they're bringing past into a present but having recreated it. And it strangely has that kind of a feel. It's so odd, especially when you've looked at pictures and imagery in books, and so you've learned it and seen it in that way, but then to actually have it in front of you and like, no, this is the real thing. This has been here that long. This is what you've seen in books. So it's almost, you almost have to pinch yourself to remind yourself that, no, this is real. Where I am is a real place and not just something that I'm visiting in my mind.
And that was a little bit my experience. So after we lived in Spain, we moved to England, and one of the ways that my parents would babysit me when we went to London to visit was they would leave me at the British Museum.
Mm-hmm.
I was old enough to be left on my own. But by the time they
child.
Were like, we're going to meet back here, you know, at 4 o'clock or whatever for tea, I was already in the Egyptian wing. So by the time I got to Egypt as a young adult, it was like visiting old family members mm-hmm. or relatives, because they were images I had seen so consistently for decades at that point that it was kind of like, oh, that statue. Oh, okay, that. And so great sense of familiarity. And I had done some traveling in the Middle East before then. So the very old age of places, I realized that I could hear the bones in the voices rather, in the stones and around me, and I could pick up all of the essence of what it was like to be there. And so that's what I ended up writing in my books.
It's like time traveling.
Yeah.
It really is. It really is in such a real way. Yeah.
So, and then my books are about time travel. So, you know, I just doubled down on that.
Understandably.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, yes. What would be the last thing that you would say about ancient Egypt?
Wow. You know, there's so much that we don't know. There's a lot of infighting between Egyptologists about what was, and, you know, it's hard to really bring all of that. I feel like there's just a lot missed when they're looking at it purely in that way. There are oral historians that are cultural, that if you go there, that can actually speak to, over time, things that have been passed down and how it's been things
transmuted.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that Egyptology also doesn't pay attention to those things. So me liking to kind of gather as much information as possible and decipher from there, that's kind of how I look at it. But
so I think what you're saying is that because Egyptology is focused so much on sort of the post-Enlightenment view of the world,
yes.
which is just what you can prove and what you can see and you can touch, that the whole spiritual aspect of it just is dismissed as, well, huh, woo-woo.
Yeah, like super woo-woo. And yeah, it is dismissed. And also that in general, that our science has a tendency to think that this period in time is the smartest that humans have ever been, which I think we're starting to see that
Maybe not true, since nobody has ever been able to replicate building a pyramid.
Exactly.
So,
How about you?
Last thing. I would say, if you dream of Egypt, ask your dreams. Like, did I belong there at one point in time?
I mean, it was a long span of time. If you believe in reincarnation at all, chances are you were there probably at least once. All right. Well, so much to say, so little time. I am going to mention, thinking about it, since we realize that we have not gotten into too much detail on this, and there's just so much. You may see another E for Egypt episode from us. That might be a thing.
So we may have E's just interleaved through the alphabet. It'll be fine.
It'll be okay. Don't worry about it.
But meanwhile, what is up next is F. Four?
Fairies.
They're not what you think they are.
This is true.
And Michael's going to tell us all about it because she knows the fairies.
I kind of do. Yeah,
so
I do.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of All the Woo A to Z.
We'll see you next time.